My Muscle Project, welcome back to this episode of In the Black. This week, well, actually, before we get into this week, we put up a little voting system on our Instagram. And what we decided was, with some of these episodes, not this one today, but in future episodes where Raf and I maybe do a couple of parts or we go through a process that we use at Creature, we're going to start turning those into some usable PDF guides, some downloads that you guys can have. I mean, you listen to the show, you might be in the car, there might be some really good stuff, but you know, if we talk for 20, 30 minutes, sometimes it's difficult to remember all the steps that we mentioned in the episode. So what we're going to start doing is we're going to have a page for you guys listening to this who you know, have some kind of business or maybe a side hustle, or you have your own book of clients, or you know, you even have a gym or multiple gyms, and you want to learn from some of the, or just basically have an easy resource that you can pull up at any time from some of these episodes. So we're going to go back to some old episodes, and then of course in some future episodes we will have a resources page for you guys fairly soon. That is by popular demand, so we will have that up and we'll let you know on this show soon. Today we actually have Asia's best gym as voted by, I'm not sure the voting place, but you wouldn't claim that if it wasn't serious. 2018, the best gym, voted the best gym in Asia, so the most recent vote. I mean, we haven't finished 2019, so you can't possibly win that yet. And that gym is Base Gym in Bangkok, in Thailand, capital of Thailand. They have three locations in Bangkok. And the guy, Jack, who is the owner and the founder, was on the show today. And it's really interesting. I think just, we always get the UK, the American, or the Australian market on. And they're all, you know, different, but overall, 80% of them, very consistent, very similar. And so it's interesting to get a different perspective on from a different market. Obviously, a huge emerging market with a lot of people, you know, ton of people, and you know, you think it's primarily expats, and it was, you know, 10 years ago, but now the local population is getting involved. There's much more money pouring into these countries, obviously because of the manufacturing and different aspects of global trade. So it's a really interesting chat just to kind of see what stuff doesn't really apply to us and what stuff they're doing differently over there. So we are excited to bring this episode to you guys. Before we get stuck into it today, guys, we are sponsored by Wattify. So, on our US trip, we were in Wattify headquarters in Philadelphia. That was one of the highlights of the trip, for sure. Spent 3 days there, and it's easy to see why they are absolutely crushing it in the CrossFit market. It's because, well, firstly, they own, of the CrossFit gyms using Wattify in Australia, it's north of 80%, which is incredible. And what they absolutely do way better, and we experienced this firsthand, is their customer support team. Now, when I think of a customer support team, don't take this the wrong way, I do think of a room of people in either Vietnam, India, sitting there with their headsets on and just answering phone calls and answering emails as they go off. No, their customer support team is in-house. It's an all-American team, and they sit there with these computer monitors, like 5 or 6 computer monitors that are up on the wall, with the tickets rolling in, the people that it's attached to. It's a very personalized process. The people that handle your concerns, your tickets, any kind of issues that you have, it's a very personalized process, and they run their team around the clock. So they do it in shifts. You know, people take the late shift to handle people that aren't on the American time zone. And just getting to meet some of the customer support staff was, you know, really, really good experience. And they genuinely care about business owners, and they tell me all the time, oh, you know, the chats that we have on the phone to our gyms and the people that we help is not always about Wattify. Sometimes it's about, hey, you know, I'm not getting enough leads, or hey, I'm really struggling to build up PT. And because these customer support guys speak so much and so often to gym owners, they get a lot of good insights. So if I was you, that's the kind of company I want to be working with. Someone that you have a relationship with, not just some giant multi-billion-dollar digital, you know, technology system. You want someone that's a bit more personalized and that can actually help you grow your business. So if you guys go to wattify.com/MMP, you can get our deal. You get 20% off your entire first year, and that customer support staff will take over your account and help you migrate everything across in a way that's really smooth. They also have the Wattify Blueprint now, which is basically their training course, and you can learn anything and everything on there as well. Definitely get up to speed with Wattify. It's something you need to do. Wattify.com/MMP. All right, guys. And before we go any further as well, True Coach is an amazing company that we use. And they, well, best way to put it is they support anyone who has a online personal training business or online one-on-one coaching business where they send out programs, or if you're the athlete receiving the programs, it's basically the connecting force between these two parties. So if you want to get onto True Coach and you want to give it a try, we recommend truecoach.co/MMP. That's truecoach.co/MMP. That's going to give you a free trial and it's going to give you a percentage off the next month. All right, guys, please enjoy Base Gym Bangkok on In the Black. All right, My Muscle Project, welcome back to another episode of In the Black. And today we have someone who is kind of owning the Asian market. We've got the 2018 Best Gym of the, or Asia's Best Gym. And it's Base Gym, and one of the locations is Bangkok's. Probably, I think Bangkok's, Jack, correct me if I'm wrong, is the flagship location for Base Gym.
We actually have three locations in central Bangkok. Right. So we opened our first one in 2016, second one 2017, third one in 2018. So So far just Bangkok, but we're looking at potential international expansion maybe later this year or early next year.
Nice. So yeah, obviously there's a big fitness scene in Bangkok, obviously, like with the fighting and just the whole CrossFit and functional fitness scene kind of moving over there, which is extremely cool. And obviously a lot of expats do it and they love to holiday there and they love to travel there and that sort of thing. But if you set up a gym there, it's not going to be fully, you know, membership base of expats. It's going to be locals as well. So I think that's kind of an interesting kind of mix in that market. But looking at Base, it is a very high-end premium sort of feel and facility. Jack, could you kind of give us a little bit of an idea of kind of how you got started and where the concept and idea came from to starting Base?
Yeah, so I mean, I've seen the full evolution of the fitness industry in Thailand, really. So I came here about 15 years ago, first traveling, then I was teaching English, then I set up a clothing export business. Did that for about 5 or 6 years. Started to slow down in line with the global economic crisis, and then I got into the fitness industry. But just backtracking a little bit, when I was in running my own clothing export business, I started going to some of the chain gyms here. You know, as an expat, it's kind of hard to keep the healthy lifestyle going sometimes. You know, in Bangkok especially, it's difficult to sort of walk or cycle anywhere. It's mainly like taxis and SkyTrain. So I decided to kind of get back into fitness, and at that time, a few chain gyms had been launched, right? Very kind of sort of big box, commercial things, nothing really like boutique fitness. And just seeing the poor quality of personal training in those gyms kind of inspired me to get more into the industry. So as my clothing business was kind of going downhill, I was losing motivation with that. I really wanted a change of career. So I saw an opportunity. I saw a poor standard of personal training, went back to the UK to get qualified, came back here and started working for a very small, I guess what you could call boutique fitness training studio, which was about probably 98 to 99% expats. After I worked there for a year, we opened up a larger studio that's still running today called The Lab. And that was kind of the birth of sort of boutique fitness boutique fitness training, if you want to call it that, in Bangkok, sort of premium offerings, group class and personal training. And it just kind of exploded overnight. I think overnight we went to about 30% Thais from 1% to 2%. Wow. And then over time, we pretty much became 50-50. Wow. And it was pretty much just us and one other studio that were really offering anything like this for 2 or 3 years. Then you start to see a couple of other boutique fitness training studios opening up. At first, that concerned me and worried me. I had a managerial position at that time. But then I kind of realized that this was actually good for the industry. You know, it can't just be two studios forever. You know, that's not good for anyone. So then you start to sort of relax a little bit and start to actually welcome competition, because that starts to build up the industry for everyone. Then you just saw like an explosion, I would say, in all different kinds of studios. You know, we had CrossFits opening up. We had kind of functional training studios such as ours. We had like aqua biking studios, boxing studios, of course, we already had, but we had more boutique offerings coming up. And it just kind of went crazy for a few years. Just over three years ago, I left that position to set up my own concept, Base. And since then, we've kind of seen it plateau a little bit. I think people are starting to realize that boutique fitness studios are not easy to run. It's actually not a fast track to make money, even though the sort of health, fitness, wellness industry is, you know, quote unquote, exploding. So now we've seen it kind of level off a little bit. I think people are a bit more cautious. Investors are a little bit more cautious. And it's kind of stabilized. But there certainly is, you know, opportunities. It certainly is very much a growing industry. I chose not to do, you know, a franchise or CrossFit or anything like that, because I felt ready and confident to build my own concept. Whenever I go traveling, I always visit as many gyms as I possibly can to get inspiration. So I've always quite liked the cardio and strength pairing, you know, kind of like Barry's Bootcamp, Orange Theory, that kind of thing. I quite liked how they did that. So I kind of wanted to put my own spin on that. So our concept is HIIT and strength training. We use treadmills, rowing machines, assault bikes for the like HIIT cardio component. And then we use, you know, traditional sort of functional strength training equipment for the strength side. So barbells, dumbbells, kettlebells, TRX. So yeah, that was sort of where the concept was born from. We've developed that over the last 3 years. And one thing that we really focus on is recording all of our clients' results. So we do a monthly session called Baseline, where you do 8 standardized cardio and strength tests. And we're actually working on some technology to run that into our normal group classes. So as you go through a group class, you can effectively record your results on some air bike HIIT sets, treadmill run sets, and strength training as well. So that's kind of a big project that we're working on with Base. So that's pretty much where we're at. 3 studios strong, looking at, as I said, potential expansion in the next year or so.
Nice. What? So as part of that, what sort of integration have you created with personal training? Obviously, high-end studios, most people think of having a one-on-one relationship with a trainer. Have you focused mainly on the group model, or have you integrated PT to a large extent?
Our business is actually about 50-50. I find it a really sort of interesting thing to reflect on and think about. You know, if you look at the big fitness chains that have expanded, it's pretty much group class training. You know, look at F45, you look at CrossFit, again, you look at Orange Theory, Barry's Bootcamp. And that's because you can standardize the workout, right? And in terms of kind of, yeah, expanding and franchising out and growing, I think the focus, or certainly for us, pretty much is group class training, the concept that we built there. Personal training, we do have a level of standardization in terms of what our coaches should be doing, but it's pretty much down to them using their qualifications and their expertise and experience to give their client the best possible session for them. And we have guys that are specialists in strength and conditioning. We have guys that are specialists in, you know, weight loss, postural analysis, and, you know, dealing with clients with scoliosis, rehab trainers. So we pretty much just pair up the client that we think is right for the coach. When I look at expansion, I sort of think more about the group class training model. Because I think, again, you know, you come to our base build class, for example, and that is a strength training class. So you come to that for strength training. Personal training, I think we, you know, as we expand and if we do go the franchise route, I'd certainly like to keep our studio open for that. And I'd like to give our franchisees or gym owners support in doing that. But I just think it's a very difficult thing to standardize. And I don't think really many studios have done that. I know, for example, F45, they don't actually allow personal training in their studio, which I find kind of quite interesting. I think, you know, there are people that do need that one-to-one service. I think if you have coaches that can provide that, I think it's kind of crazy not to use the space for that. So yeah, I guess to answer your question, our business now is about 50-50. In terms of how we will expand and how we will grow internationally, I feel like focusing on our group class concept and what we offer there is the route that we'll go.
It seems like to me that, yeah, personal training, if you're into a franchise, it just hasn't really got the margins in it to make it work, because I mean, the only franchise PT I know is Vision, and they basically just get entry-level trainers that they can pay, you know, $20 an hour but charge the client $100, and it's really the only way to make it work, whereas group, you can obviously get higher margins for your business. So it seems like that kind of does hold it back from anyone really doing PT as a model across multiple locations.
I think conceptually it's quite hard to sort of have 100 locations worldwide doing personal training, again, because every single session is going to be different. I think one interesting model to look at is Ultimate Performance. It sounds like, I haven't heard of the one that you mentioned, but it sounds like a similar kind of model. They have a very, very structured way that they do training. They get you on a very sort of tough diet. You know, you need to go a certain amount of times. It's very expensive. Tons of before and after photos are put up, and they kind of take each person through this very sort of regimented system. It looks like it kind of does get results, right? It does get people to lose weight, and then they just sort of focus on that. So they've done a good job at it, but I don't see many people doing that really. And I think, you know, that for me is not how I would want to run a personal training studio. I would want to give my coaches more flexibility, and so scaling is difficult.
And so what is it about the Asian market that has changed recently? Because, you know, 10 years ago, I don't even think there was like enough money in the local population to afford boutique fitness. But obviously things have changed a lot, just for a variety of reasons and, you know, how trade is moving on a global economic scale and where money's pouring in and out of. What did you kind of notice with your local populations? You know, 50% now, it's a lot of locals being able to afford your sort of fitness. Like, what sort of industries they're coming from? Like, what kind of do they have the same desires and needs as Western populations? Like, what's happening in that market?
It's shifted even more now. I'd say we're about 65% Thai, 35% expat, and that's actually quite high expat now. I think a lot of studios are about 90% Thai, which is awesome, and that's enabled the industry to grow and explode. You know, if it was just expats, it would still be tiny. It would still be very niche. No one would really be talking about it, and we wouldn't have the business that we have today. I think there's always been people in the major Asian cities with money. So there's always been people that could afford this, for sure. You know, Singapore's always been a very wealthy country. Bangkok's always had, like, people that could afford it. Mm. But what I think we've seen is certainly a growing middle class. The more people can afford this, for sure. And then it's just become, like, you know, I guess in line with worldwide trends, it's just become like a lifestyle thing. You know, people are proud to say they train at Barry's Bootcamp, at CrossFit, at Base. You know, they want to tell their friends that. They want to put that on Instagram. And, you know, what we offer is just so different and so much more refined, let's say, than what the chain gyms are generally offering, certainly in Thailand, that people can sort of see how it's different and how it's better as well. In line with all of those things, they're just willing to pay more for it. You know, the charges that the prices that we charge now, we just couldn't have charged 10 years ago. People just would have thought we were insane, everyone. Whereas now they're willing to pay the money for it. So, you know, as Asia develops economically, there's more and more opportunities in the big cities. You know, I visit cities around Asia fairly often, and there's just so much opportunity for growth. It's unreal. Mm. Just like economically, so in terms of them having more money to be able to afford it. And then just in terms of the quality of offering, I think in a lot of these places, you know, you have a few places that are doing things very well. You know, Singapore and Hong Kong have a lot of like international chains, and they have a lot of, you know, locals and expats that have really built like cool brands there. But, you know, I see some of these like growing Asian cities, and man, the opportunity is huge on so many levels. And that's where I think actually these big franchises can come in. They can offer like structured class, some tech, a fancy Western brand, and actually do really well.
Right. So, you mentioned international expansion. Were you talking about other countries in Asia, or were you talking about on a global Australia, America, Europe?
Yeah, maybe Australia would come at some point. I think for us, it would make sense to keep it more local, first of all. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just something we've been considering. I think when you look at expansion, whether that's sort of for me within Bangkok, whether that's international, you've got to really think about the reasons that you're doing it. And it can't be because it sounds sexy and cool and glamorous to have another location, right? So yeah. That's kind of an internal conversation that I'm having with myself. You know, why do we want to do international expansion? Is it because there's a great opportunity there and we can bring something truly unique and great to the market and we can make money doing so? Or does it just sound cool to have an international location? You know, the reality is I'll be traveling back and forth for a long time. It'll be a big sacrifice from my side. I've kind of realized now that it's something that I want to do because I think we're developing something so great, especially with this technology that we'll be working into group classes, that it would kind of be criminal not to expand beyond Bangkok. That's right. Kind of how I feel. And I spoke to a guy who has a chain of yoga studios in Singapore, and he's built this whole like app around his business, you know, that's sort of separate from Mindbody and the other platforms, which again, he just says is so great, is so unique to the industry. He feels now like he can't just keep that in Singapore. He needs to sort of, you know, build that out and expand that out, which I can totally relate to now. If, you know, things go well in Singapore or Hong Kong or wherever we go next, and we have a very, very strong concept and we have very strong systems, then again, I think, you know, it does offer the opportunity to expand further. And that could be, you know, Australia, the States, Europe, but we're quite a long way from there at the moment.
And what are you mentioned, you know, a few of the other gym chains, F45, Orange Theory, Barry's Bootcamp, CrossFit. Obviously, you've tried a lot of those classes and you see kind of how they operate. What have you taken from them that works, and what have you taken from them that doesn't work and changed about Base? Because I feel like we've seen it all and everything's kind of been done a certain way. What is it about Base, a Base class, a group class, that is unique?
There's a few things that are unique. One is the particular way that we combine high intensity interval training and strength training. But I guess, you know, a lot of studios would say that their particular concept of that is unique. Again, it's our recording of results as we go through the workout. And at the moment, we just do it without tech. So they just write it on boards. But that really encourages people to go that little bit harder, that little bit faster in all of the hit sets. Once we incorporate the technology into that, and that will allow us to really track our clients' results and show them how much they're improving, I think that will be like our true differentiator. And that's something that I'm personally really excited about. If you look at the branches that you mentioned, you know, I don't just visit those. I visit pretty much every top studio in every city that I go to. So I was recently in London, already been to most of the top studios there. So I went to all the new ones that I hadn't. stopped off in Dubai on the way back, went to 5 or 6 different studios there, didn't do Barry's Bootcamp because I know what to expect from that one. So when I go to these places, I'm not really looking at like conceptually things that we can use at Base. It's more just like the whole experience, like every single little thing that they do. You know, last year, me and my girlfriend went to New York and LA and did the same thing as well. It's kind of like a half sort of R&D trip, half holiday. And I just pick up on the smallest little things. You know, how easy is it to book the class on the website? Do they send me an email saying, okay, this is how you get to our studio. We can't wait to welcome you. When I arrive, how do they welcome me? Do they have a smile? Do they say, you know, welcome to our studio? Do they ask if I have any injuries? I'm kind of breaking down every single little bit. Even when I go in the bathrooms, I find myself with all the construction sort of issues that we have. I find myself looking around all the fixtures, the fittings. Is there music? What shower gel do they use? And then when it comes to the class, it's like, does it start on time? I mean, you'd just be amazed at how many studios their classes are starting 2, 3, 5 minutes late, finishing 2, 3, 5 minutes late. That's not okay in New York or London. People have got places to go. People have got things to do. You just wouldn't believe how common that is. So really, I'm not looking for things conceptually. I'm looking for what can we learn from, you know, oh man, the way they introduced the class then was awesome. The way the front desk welcomed me was just bang on. Often it's like, man, I need to make sure that does not happen at Base. Like what happened there, that just cannot absolutely happen. So through these experiences and through seeing pretty much what's going on in the fitness industry all over the world, we just refine our procedures, our guidelines, our training for all of our coaches, all of our front desks, just kind of make sure or try and make sure that we are sort of at the very top of the industry.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, I find that an incredibly valuable experience, and I would highly recommend that anyone in this industry does that. And if you're in the hotel industry, do the same thing for hotels, right? In the restaurant industry, do the same thing for restaurants. It's kind of beyond me really why people wouldn't do this, and it's just been so valuable. And every time I come back, I share all of my findings, all of my thoughts with the staff. And it's also, you know, a reminder to them. Some of them haven't even been outside of Thailand. They've lived here all their lives. It's also a reminder to them, like, hey guys, I know you haven't been to New York and you haven't been to London, but trust me, what we're doing here really is as good as many of the studios there. There's some great ones, but you know, we would still be great there as well. And that's a good reminder to our staff.
Yeah, it's interesting. The staff and the team thing is like what will differentiate you from the franchises that will eventually, I feel like, fizzle out. Right, because like you said, everyone's going to say they're unique, their concept is unique, and in reality they are. Everyone is doing something slightly different, right? But it is the overall client experience that is the hardest thing to do well and consistently and at scale and, you know, be the best at, right? To have the best customer experience.
Yeah, I think
that.
it is a differentiator, but yeah, if someone says, oh, what makes Base different, you can't really say that because everyone's going to say the same thing. So it's kind of one of those things that I know does make us stand out. You know, I know our standards in many areas are higher than most of the competition in this region. But it's for a differentiator, you need that thing that's like, okay, boom, that's the thing that makes you different. And then for us, that would be, you know, the tech, the recording of results.
Right. But yeah, I mean, like the staff still run the show, right? They still... They turn the lights on, they open the doors, they greet people, you know, they make all the systems work. How are you leading them and managing them, especially at the scale of, you know, one owner and three gyms at this stage?
We're certainly seeing new challenges every day with that. You know, we've done a lot of things right in the first few years, but going from 1 to 2 and then going from 2 to 3, holes just start appearing out of nowhere. You know, things that were just completely under control with one branch, suddenly you have issues with two. Same thing with 2 to 3 branches. And we're working through some of those now. You know, I think on the coaching side, I'm pretty happy the direction that we're going in. There's other areas of the businesses that certainly need a lot of work, I think, and we're sort of seeing that. What I'm trying to do now and what I'm trying to get our team to do as well and trying to kind of inspire them to do is, okay, we've gone from 2 to 3 branches now. We need to set up these 3 branches as if we had 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do we train our front desk when they come in? You know, those first 2 weeks when we're training them on how to do the job. You know, how do we, what kind of process do we go through with new clients when they come in to sign up? If someone walks past our studio and comes in and says, oh, you know, what's Base all about? How do we answer that? And how are the team and the staff trained to answer that question? And I think that's something that we're working through now. You know, I think if we can do that right now, then I'm hoping that 3 to 4 branches will be a lot smoother than the steps that we've had so far. You know, I need to also bear in mind, or we need to bear in mind as a company, as a team, that if we go from 3 to 4 branches, that's a 2-hour flight away. You know, so it's not like I can just run over, or one of our fitness managers can just run over and sort something out. You know, we might need to fly back if things go wrong. So it's a kind of a mindset of like, always looking for holes and always looking at ways we can improve, and now trying to fix those in a way that even if we had 10 branches, things would still work and things would still be okay.
For sure. And how are you going to incentivize staff to stay around? The fitness industry has the most churn, only second to the restaurant industry, the hospitality industry, of staff turnover. So do you feel like you have a unique sort of retention structure for your staff?
It's a great question. I think a lot's being talked at the moment about client retention, which is obviously incredibly important. I don't think enough is being talked about staff retention. Mm. I'm very, very proud of our staff retention rate. No one has left us to go freelance. And you're always kind of battling against that, right? Our trainers could earn twice as much per hour freelance. And I don't try and hide that fact at all. They know that. Or that, you know, no one's left to go to another gym either. They've, you know, if they've left, they've left to go back to their home country. So I'm incredibly proud of that. The way that we've done that is by developing them, by really getting them to learn every single week, every single month. We hold regular workshops. So people who are more experienced in a certain training methodology or a tool will train the other staff. We have a very, very comprehensive training program for new coaches that come in. It was just based on all of my experience, which is 8 years in the industry. We have guys who've got 10, 15 years of the industry who've helped develop this training program. And again, it's based on all of the classes that I've been to all around the world in the last sort of 3 or 4 years. So when they come in, we show them, the new coaches, that we really mean business. Our standards are incredibly high. We want you to be a coach that's leading the industry, you know, one of the top coaches in Asia, and we won't rest up until until you are. And if you're not going to be, or if you don't have a desire to be, then you're just not right for base. Mm-hmm. So because of that, and because they can feel that we're really invested into them, and it's one of our stated values of the company that they're always developing, I think that helps us retain our very best staff. The second way that we do that is we're very careful about recruitment. We're very careful about who we bring into the business. You know, we want people that whose values are aligned with ours. So we need to find people that want to grow and want to develop, right? If they come in, they're like, yeah, I want to make as much money as I possibly can. Well, you can earn really good money at base, but per hour, you're not going to earn as much as a freelance coach. So maybe if you just want to earn as much cash as possible, maybe go out and really try and build your client base. If they want to earn money, but that's, you know, not their top priority perhaps, and they want to learn, they want to develop, they want to grow, they want to be part of something special that's growing and developing, perhaps they want the opportunity to do another role in the business or in the company, then base could be for them. So but we don't get it right every time, but by having this robust recruitment process, by making sure we identify in that 3-month probation whether this is the right environment for them, by showing them that we mean business and we're not going to rest up until they're just an incredible coach. And then the other things such as the ongoing training and ongoing development have created this environment where we've retained all of our staff, which, you know, like I said, I'm very proud about. To go back to your previous question, if I could just do that briefly, what I'm trying to build now is the same thing for our front desk staff. So we don't have as good a retention rate with our front desk staff. So I've started to look at that now. You know, it's a value of our company that we're always developing our team. Okay, but that can't just be the coaches, right? That should also be the front desk staff. They should be upskilling in sales, in marketing, if that's something they want to learn about. Excel, Word, or this kind of stuff. Just making sure that they're also learning and developing as well. And then I'm hoping that, you know, some of them will stay around for longer as well.
And have you found more success bringing in, you know, the more experienced fitness trainer, maybe someone that's like managed a gym or has been doing, you know, PT freelance business for like 10 plus years? Or because you offer a lot in terms of development, do you go after, you know, younger, fresher people in the fitness industry that are probably happy to not make as much money because they're fresh, but are really looking to learn and grow in the company?
It's another great question. It's something that I've given a lot of thought to. Early on in my managerial career, if you had experience, I was over the moon. In the interview, if you said you were a 10-year coach, I was like, brilliant, we can get you straight in. You can do these classes because you've got experience doing that. You can train these clients that need a new coach. And I was like, yeah, this person's going to be perfect. I then realized after a few tough experiences that really isn't always the case. And because we have a way of doing things, we have a methodology, certainly in terms of our classes, you have to be open-minded. You have to be willing to adapt. And, you know, I've had some bad experiences with people with a lot of experience, and then some have worked out fantastically well. The difference now is I feel I'm quite comfortable in the recruitment process, that I can kind of wean out the ones they're not going to be able to adapt to our environment and not be open-minded and not kind of buy into what we do. And the ones that really want to learn, really appreciate what we do, really want to grow and develop. So now actually the kind of people that I really love working with is brand new coaches. Like they're just qualified. They're completely fresh in the industry. They're like a clean slate. And they're the ones typically that are like most excited about getting into the industry. And they're the ones that we can really again, show them that we do things right at base. We see this as a career. You know, this isn't, you know, just a passion job. Like, you know, you could be passionate about it. That's great. But, you know, this can be a real career. You can earn good money. The industry is growing here. There's a lot of opportunities at base and in the wider industry. So it's really our opportunity to kind of get them really excited about getting into this industry and showing them that they do have a career here in Asia in this industry and also at base as well. So I mean, I would say all of my biggest sort of, you know, personal success stories that I'm proud of are all completely fresh, brand new coaches that got in the industry. And as we've grown, it's actually got easier to recruit. More and more people are sending us resumes. We've had quite a few clients recently. They've expressed an interest now in getting into the industry, which is just a beautiful thing. I think it's kind of the ultimate endorsement of what you do if a client wants to come and work for you. I think that's great. And they are just superstars. You know, some of them have been with us now for sort of 3, 4, 5 months, and they are just awesome. And they're so excited to be here. So those are the kind of people that I really love working with the most, I think.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Have you guys had a similar experience, you know, sort of experienced coaches versus like brand new?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I think we've found that you do need the experienced coaches, but you need a stronger sort of filtering process with your values and the systems and where they've come from, because they are going to bring a lot of their own ideas and ways and habits of doing things, which, you know, are not right or wrong, but they just might not align with your business. And so you just got to be very careful with how you go with kind of bringing them into your system if they are very experienced. And yeah, we've kind of, you know, been developing that filtering process so that it is, like you said, robust and it does work extremely well. But, you know, with the young, fresh coaches, obviously you can teach them everything. The only issue is that, you know, it's just, it's a question of are they appearing mature because they're actually mature, or do they just kind of have this really good ability to fake maturity, and like later it's going to kind of be like unravel in front of you where it's like, oh, they just made some huge immature error, where you're like, man, you know, someone that's, you know, closer to 30 just wouldn't have made that sort of error. Had a few more careers before that. Know that that's just not acceptable and you can't do that thing. So
I think for me, the 3-month probation is just absolutely crucial as well. A lot of people can fake an interview. They can fake a couple of interviews. We do a trial training session, which is like a really important part of the process for us. So they would train either me or they would train one of, you know, our clients or one of our friends. We would observe. And one of the most crucial parts of that process for me is giving them constructive feedback on the session, right? So it's like, this was great. This was done really well. I feel this could have been improved, or this is more how we do things. And just seeing how they respond to that, I think that is huge. And again, early on, I had some, almost people sort of fighting back a little bit, not receiving that feedback very well. But I just overlooked that because of their experience. I've got 10 years in the industry. We should really get this person in. Now, for me, that would be like a massive red flag. And actually, someone who's worked with me for about 5 years, he was at I worked with him in a previous company, and he works for Base now. He had a lot of experience. So again, and by then I'd kind of already had a few coaches have a lot of experience and sort of not have great experiences with them. Gave him some feedback on like kettlebell technique and how he taught that, because that's an area of speciality for me. And he was just so receptive. He was like, yeah, this isn't something I know much about. I'd really love to learn more. Like, it's great that you're experienced in this area. Like, that's great feedback. Thank you. And that for me was like, okay, this guy could really work. And he did, you know, he's been absolutely awesome. So yeah, I think that, yeah, there's a lot you can do in the recruitment process. And then that 3-month probation, you should hopefully be able to see any warning signs there. You would hope.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's some good insights. So in the sort of Asia scene for marketing, how you're sort of marketing to the area, are they as responsive? Well, I guess you don't really have the comparison, but how responsive do you find they are to sort of like paid advertising and Instagram and stuff at the moment? Because, you know, my experience has been when I've traveled to Asia, and I have quite a fair bit, is they are extremely plugged into the digital world, far more so than the Western world. I mean, we think we have a digital problem. That is nothing compared to the level they're at. I mean, the government subsidized programs in South Korea for digital addiction rehabilitation. Like,
well, in Vietnam, they barely look up off their phone when they're driving motorcycles.
Yeah. No, it's become absolutely absurd. Have you found that, you know, digital marketing, paid advertising through social platforms are quite powerful in Asia, or is the more traditional forms working quite well, or referrals? How does that go in Asia?
Yeah, it's a great question. I completely, you're absolutely right with your observation. I think Thais are very engrossed in either Instagram or Facebook. You know, when I'm on the SkyTrain, I find it interesting to see people's viewing habits or scrolling habits, you know, and everyone on the SkyTrain is just like this, firing through their phone, just consuming as much content as they possibly can. And it's honestly, mate, it's scary, to be honest with you. So it's, they use it a lot. I think their usage time is one of the highest in the world. We've actually had the effectiveness of paid advertising decline, I would say, in the last 2 or 3 years. I don't know if that's consistent with Australia. I think just, yeah, maybe more people advertising. Maybe people are less inclined to leave a telephone number or an email address. I mean, typically here, Thais are kind of fine with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think more so that in the West, I think in the UK, people are very careful about leaving a telephone number or an email address. So it still works very well for us. But I would say, you know, I probably missed the golden age for that. But when we first opened and we first started doing it, man, it was great. Like, you know, we'd set up just sort of a basic online campaign and leads would just be firing through, you know. So that, and actually, you know, when I first opened Base, I didn't know a huge amount about marketing and we chose to do it in-house because I wasn't happy with the agencies here and the freelancers that I spoke to. And then, so I started learning about it and we started doing it in-house. And then it was our first January, sort of 4 or 5 months in, when we really started doing all of these lead generation campaigns. And man, it was huge. You know, cost per lead was really low. You know, everyone was really receptive. It just works really, really well. So although we still, of course, do all of that and it works really well for us still, it's definitely declining. Mm. Is it the same in Australia?
It's different, yeah. I mean, it's not the golden age anymore. Cost per lead's gone up, but it's still an extremely effective form of marketing. I think it's just become a part of the entire marketing strategy then, as opposed to in the golden age, like, oh, we can just do this right now because it's working so well. Put every dollar into it. So it's a bit of a mix. I think in the e-commerce game, it's still the number one way to make money is through social media advertising. But in brick and mortar, there's just too many other things that you got to do, because you have a location, right? You got to have referrals. You got to have email marketing. You got to have just general content on your socials. You got to have good banners, flyers, advertising. Like, we just put in a massive order for like all these stickers, and we're just going to go stick them all over the local area, you know, probably illegally. There's probably some council rules about that, but
local bodies
doesn't matter.
In Thailand, you can definitely get away with that, but yeah, not sure about Australia. Might have to be a little more careful. Yeah. I mean, referrals work, you know, are great for us as well. We get a lot of people naturally referring. We've had a few campaigns where you can bring a friend for free, or if you refer a friend who buys a package, you both get a free class, and those have been like moderately successful for us. I think for personal training, we try and get the coaches to, we do offer a free session for anyone referred and also for the referrer for personal training. And I just think that helps to like push things along if they have a friend who they think, you know, might be interested. Again, for us, you know, with current clients, marketing to them, email marketing has been huge for us. We've invested quite a lot in learning more about that. And, you know, we've launched campaigns. You can buy packages online at Base, you know, so we can just do like a discount code and you can just sort of fire that out to the clients. Yeah. And, you know, we've done a lot of research on the best way to use email marketing, you know, how to sort of build value, you know, how often you should put kind of sales out and stuff like that. And that's worked really, really well for us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not been unusual to put out a campaign and just sort of bring maybe $10,000 of business, you know, in a couple of days. And what's really fascinating about that, what I just find really interesting about the human psych, is you can have maybe like a 3-day sale, and we don't really do many sales, but let's say for argument's sake, it's a 10% off sale, right? Because we don't do them, it's particularly effective. People are quite excited about it. You'll get, at the very beginning, you'll get some sales come through, and then it will kind of slow down. Then when you get to the last few hours, like I'm talking about almost midnight, you know, so 10 p.m., 11 p.m., even like 11:50, you'll get like a ton of sales coming through, which I just find really fascinating. Mm. Like they must just be like, oh, should I, shouldn't I, should I, shouldn't I? But by having that deadline, when it comes to the crunch, they're like, fuck it, I'm going to get it. And they just do. And, you know, we sold big packages at like 5 minutes to midnight. Would that person have bought the next day? You know, if we just had an open-ended sale and suddenly it was like, yeah, sorry, guys, the sale's ended now. Probably not. So, you know, I find that really interesting. So I can get into the psychology of marketing and how people think and what encourages them to buy. So, you know, we do it all internally. We do it all in-house. And it's something that, you know, I think we're always trying to improve. And I think every business should, you know, if you're neglecting sort of digital marketing and all of these channels as a gym or as a business, then you're in serious shit. Mm.
Yeah, I always find it hilarious when I'm looking at leads coming through and it's like, 2 a.m. Saturday night, 4 a.m. Saturday night. I'm like, what kind of drunken misery have this person got themselves into where they're on a gym website scrolling through gyms going, yeah, I'm going to put my phone number in all these gyms, you know, like
Yeah, you know what that is, though. They haven't pulled, right? They've gone out. It's 3 a.m. They're in the taxi on their own. They're like, fucking hell, again? Really? And they're like, right, that is it. I'm going to make a commitment now. And they just start scrolling. I mean, it's probably that, right? I mean, it's interesting, again, to try and get into their minds. Mm. You know, why does someone do that? I mean, it probably is that. Or maybe they're just going through Instagram. Mm. I think, the more you can get into the client's mind, the more you can try and understand them, the more you can market to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good point to kind of wrap up with. So, where can we find out more about Base? If we're in Bangkok, where are the locations so we can come check them out?
Yeah, we've got 3 locations in Bangkok. We have, they're all connected to the SkyTrain, so you don't even need to touch the ground. You can go through all 3 locations. We've got BTS Tong Lo, which is in the Tong Lo district, of course. That's kind of like the main sort of residential area, you could say. We have our second location, which is in the business district. That's Saton, and it's next to Chong Non Si BTS. Our third location is next to Chitlong BTS, and that kind of branches the two. So we've kind of got this triangle in central Bangkok. How to find us? Just Google Base Bangkok. We're Base Bangkok on everything, Instagram, Facebook, basebangkok.com. So yeah, pretty easy to find us. Personally, I'm Jack T. Base at Instagram. Feel free to shoot me a DM or a message, and I'll be happy to have a chat.
Nice. And you've got a podcast as well, Jack?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I run the Fitness Business Asia podcast, which is, as the name suggests, on the fitness business in this region in Asia. So it's a mix of solo podcasts from myself where I talk about many of the things that we've discussed today, HR, PR, recruitment, building culture, all of that kind of stuff. And then we alternate that with interviews with guests from around the region and also internationally as well. But we always give it that Asian angle so that people in this region can particularly benefit.
Fantastic. All right, Jack, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Plenty of insights and just good energy overall. So thank you so much. And if we come to Thailand, we'll be visiting Base undoubtedly.
Please do, man. Yeah, please get in touch. It's been a pleasure, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.